everyone, and welcome back to this week's Off the Bench podcast. I'm Sam from FPL Family.
And I'm Andy, FPL Sonaldo.
Wow, Andy. Game week 11. My goodness. Haaland going off at halftime for a one-pointer. Blanks for Saka, Salah, Madison, Son, Watkins and Alvarez. Meanwhile, Marcus Rashford, who's still owned by over 13% of managers, misses out altogether. It was just one of those weeks for FPL managers. The average this week, just 32. That's 12 less than it's been at any other point so far this season. For me, this was definitely a week of what could have been. Andy, how was game week 11 for you?
Yeah, it was almost a historical week of absolute failure for most managers in terms of transfers in. It was a really bad week for a lot of people. But for me personally, Sam, I actually got a green arrow at 35 points.
Wow!
One of the rare ones to get a green arrow, thanks to the likes of Cole Palmer. I think a lot of us that wildcarded in game week 10 had Cole Palmer in our team. Mm. So that just goes to show what this game week was about. All the heavy hitters, all the popular picks, all the high EO picks didn't deliver. So one to forget, but I don't think one to dwell on too much. How about yourself, Sam?
Oh yeah, for me it was a week where I was saved by two players. So Mark Gahey's clean sheet coming in very handy, and then Jared Bowen with his return. I think I had 25. It was a red arrow, but actually I thought just before we came on here, I was like, okay, I've got a man up now and check what's happened to my overall rank. But actually the impact on my overall rank was relatively minor because nobody's had a particularly great week. So yes, it's red, but it's a small red. And, you know, I look at my team and think, on paper, these guys should have returned double, treble the points that they did. And there were so many of them that could have returned. Like Son had a goal ruled out last night for offside. You know, if Haaland doesn't pick up that ankle roll and doesn't go off at half time with the way City were playing, there should have been returns in that for him. I'm not entirely sure how Mo Salah didn't get anything in the game against Luton the other night, because Liverpool, well, they were so attacking him. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. Maybe his position on the pitch wasn't quite where I'd want it to have been. There were clean sheets that I thought were going to stick that just didn't. It was just one of those weeks. But let's get cracking through these games. And given it's you and I, who are firmly part of the Heung-min Son fan club, it probably makes sense for us to start with the final game of the weekend and start with what happened at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium on Monday evening. Now, I was at that game and, nice. Well, yeah, it sort of was nice, but it was also one of the most stressful and mad games of football I've ever been to. So as you mentioned, talking about your game week, obviously Cole Palmer coming up trumps for his owners with the 12 points, Nico Jackson with his hat trick with 16. But a lot of those points, particularly the Nico Jackson ones, coming because of what's happened to the Spurs defence during the course of that game. Spurs starting for the first sort of 20, 25 minutes of the game really, really well, until the decision to send off Christian Romero and give the penalty to Chelsea. And it did fundamentally change the game. Now, if you are a Romero owner, he's obviously now going to have a three-match ban. So he is going to be an easy sell for FPL managers. Later on in the game, we see Destiny Udogie also picking up a second yellow card in the game and getting sent off. He's going to get a one-match ban for that. So if you've got him, you're going to need to consider what you do about him now, particularly as the game he's going to miss is obviously the Wolves game. And then the Spurs fixtures after that are more of a challenge. You know, we've got Manchester City coming up. So do you want to hold Udogie through that banned match to come back in afterwards? I'd argue maybe you don't. But the bigger thing for me was the injury to Mickey van de Ven, because losing Romero for three matches and then what looks to be a fairly serious hamstring injury for Mickey van de Ven, which is rumoured to be a 3-4 month gap, that's massive. So if you've got van de Ven, if you've got Romero, if you've got Destiny Udogie, suddenly all three of them looking like sells. If you do want to invest in Spurs, I mean, there's a cheeky punt on Eric Dier down there at 4.2 million. There's maybe a little bit of a cheeky punt on Ash Phillips, who's going to probably come out of the development squad now and play at centre-back against Wolves next weekend. He's 4 million. But the reality is, it's going to be a makeshift Spurs defence going forward, isn't it? And I don't think you want to stay invested.
Yeah, I mean, a lot to digest and unpack there, Sam. And I'm glad to know you went to the game. Unfortunately, as Spurs fans, we lost the game. So Romero out, VDV out. It's going to be, you know, a totally makeshift defense. And I just don't think Dyer is a good FPL replacement, even at his price point. Plus, they have tough fixtures coming up. Madison also a little bit of a niggle, so that's very worrying too. Maybe Son is the one that's still fixture proof, and I think he's okay to have in your team. But we'd like to see how the Spurs play out. I think early in the season, I was telling myself this too. Spurs squad is so thin that one or two key injuries, it could be detrimental to their season. And, you know, they're fighting for a top four, but with these injuries, it's going to be really, really hard for them to, you know, continue on to try to win the Premier League, especially with Son being out for the Asian Cup in January as well.
Mm.
It seems like a season where Postecoglou needs to try to get into the top four, make some signings in the summer and winter this season, and really try to win the league, hopefully next season or the season after. This is a season of survival at this point with the amount of injuries they have. FPL-wise, I don't think anybody you should bring in, especially with their fixtures being tough for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I think when it comes to James Maddison, he's going to be one of those weeks where we just really have to wait and see what Anne says at the back end of the week. It was a knock to the ankle. I think mostly, you know, when Ange was talking after the game, he was talking about how we were already a man down at that point. There was going to have to be some tactical shifts in terms of the way that we played the game. Now, I don't think those tactical shifts would have been taking off James Maddison had it not been for the knock. However, the knock kind of means that he was the more obvious player to come off, I guess. And he did play on for a little while afterwards. And important to note, he didn't go down the tunnel. He sat on the bench for the rest of the game, watching, supporting. So whereas obviously with Van de Ven, who went off at the same time, they took him straight down the tunnel for treatment. So I'm not overly concerned about Maddison. I'll be holding him till the back end of the week to see what Postecoglou's got to say, and then making a decision on him from there. The one thing I would say is that, you know, if you are heavily invested in Spurs, like a lot of managers are with the likes of Maddison and with Son, the attacking football was still there. Even when we were down to nine men, we were still playing this Ange ball system. Now, whether that's sensible when you're down to nine men remains to be seen. But actually, you know, had the multiple offside goals that we had in that game stood, things might have been a bit different. But
yeah,
that's probably enough chat about Spurs. I think, you know, if you've got a defender, you sell. If you've got Maddison, I think you hold until we find out a little bit more about his injury and the knock and whether that's going to rule him out of game week 12 or not. But from a Chelsea perspective, for the first half an hour of the game, I wasn't that impressed, particularly defensively. They looked all at sea and they couldn't really cope with the pace that Spurs were putting the ball forward. Obviously, the sendings off massively affected the game. I thought it was one of the best Sterling performances that I've seen in a little while. Mm-hmm. He was a real frustration to Spurs. But for me, it was Cole Palmer again that kind of is the one that I'll be looking at from a fantasy perspective. 12 points in this one. The goal, obviously, another penalty. There's no doubt that he is Chelsea's number one penalty taker. And at 5 million, that's a little bit of a gift, isn't it?
So I know we've moved on to Chelsea, but I just want to say two things on Son before I talk about Palmer, Sam. Is that, did you know that Son this season has covered the most distant in terms of pressing? So as a number nine that's been pressing, he's covered a ton of distance, hence why you see him being so tired. He's not someone that needs a lot of chances. We've always known that he overperforms his XG. He just needs a quality amount of chances, whether that be two or three, in order to convert, because he is potentially the best finisher in the league. So
yeah,
I just want to say those two things on Son. And yes, now he's going to get even more minutes, especially with the injury crisis going on. And again, I feel like he is fixture proof. In terms of Cole Palmer, a lot of us had him on wild card in game week 10, and he's been a sort of placeholder for game week 16. For those managers that might not know this, from game week 16 through 21, Chelsea have an absolutely ridiculous run of fixtures going forward. Yeah. And Cuckoo is supposed to be coming back very soon. Apparently, the word is around game week 13 or 14. But I don't think it really affects Cole Palmer. I think Cole Palmer is sort of a leader in the team. You can see him sort of not dictate, but, you know, sort of tell the players surrounding him what to do. And for his young age and his background being from Man City, I think he's going to develop into a Premier League stud very, very soon. And so Cole Palmer is such a gift at 5.0 on penalties, Chelsea. And even if you don't rush to get him now, just remember Chelsea's fixtures from game week 16 through 21 are absolutely marvelous. So you really want him, plus potentially one or two other Chelsea players by that time.
Yeah, I mean, 37 points for Cole Palmer in the last five game weeks. And like you say, I mean, the leadership in him is very clear to see when you're watching the game. And obviously watching him last night, he's out there, he's directing play. His footballing brain is really, really intelligent. And the fact that he's on penalties, I think, you know, at the beginning of the season, it didn't look like he was necessarily going to be part of Pochettino's plans because he was playing Nkunku and Jackson up there. With Nkunku potentially coming back into the squad at some point over the next few weeks now, even whether he comes back in, he's not going to come back in and straight away start getting 90 exactly. minutes. He might come in and get some game time here and there. But even when that does happen, I agree with you. Like, I think he's become so important to the way that Chelsea play. I just don't see him dropping out of that system. Like, whether it be somebody like Jackson that drops out and maybe they share that game time up top, remains to be seen. But Jackson's numbers last night were inflated by the fact that Spurs were struggling, were down to nine men and were continuing to push forward, and he was getting plenty of space because the Spurs assets were mostly focused on dealing with Sterling on the side. And as a result, that did leave Jackson free. And of course, he gets the hat trick, 16 points in game week 11. He's still very lowly owned. And I think going through with the fixtures the way that they are, you're not necessarily going to be going there. But at the price point, Cole Palmer is a player that even with Manchester City up next, I'm still looking at because he would make a big difference to the way that my team is structured and the change to having this front three that I'm really looking at over the next few weeks. So, yeah, I think we learned quite a lot from an FPL perspective about Spurs and Chelsea across this match. For me, it's Cole Palmer only really at Chelsea right now. At Spurs, sadly, now might be the time that we start looking to offload. But I think if you've got Son, he still remains a hold for me anyway.
I think I'm totally with you. I agree. Right now, Palmer is the only option. But again, game week 16, you might want to consider other Chelsea assets. Son, I think it's a little bit iffy. Personally speaking, I feel like he's fixture proof and a hold for me because they're so attacking and he can always return in any games. But I do agree with you, the general consensus here is that the two players you want to own are Son and Palmer from the two teams.
Nice. Right, let's move on from Spurs and Chelsea then, because I think I've had enough talking about that game. And let's go over to one of the bigger games from Sunday and the Luton versus Liverpool game, because Salah was behind Haaland, the most captain player in the game this week. And I thought the system that Klopp put out was really interesting in game week 11. He benched Tsimikas, which I did not see coming. And as a Tsimikas owner, I was thoroughly annoyed to see Tsimikas on the bench because it had already been one of those game weeks where there was not enough points as it was. To see my Liverpool defender benched, I was like, well, this is disappointing. And then what we saw is a change of system based upon that benching. So we saw Trent playing that inverted role that we thought that he might play earlier on in the season. That pushed Liverpool into a back three with kind of Trent in the inverted role. That meant that centre spot and around the centre spot at Kenilworth Road was so congested. There were so many players from both Liverpool and Luton in that position that there was no space for anybody to do anything. And Luton dealt with the threat of Liverpool so well for nearly all of that game. Salah ended up, as a result of that, with chalk on his boots so far wide. And as a Mo Salah owner, that is not where I want him at all. The inverted Trent role, I think, is a waste of Mo Salah. And it means that Salah, we just don't really get the best of him. And if I'd captained him this week, I'd have been really frustrated until Klopp makes the decision later on in the game to change the formation, bring Tsimikas on, which saw Liverpool drop back into that standard four at the back formation. And in doing that, that freed up the space. It brought Salah back into the game much, much better than he had been in the previous sort of 70 minutes and allowed Liverpool to get the breakthrough. What did you make of it?
It was a very disappointing result for Liverpool, first of all, because this is a game they needed to win. I do agree with you. Salah being so wide is, you know, why fix something that's not broken is the point I want to make. And they're, you know, Liverpool were playing fine. Again, I think it's game state too, because if Nunes had finished his chances early on, we might be talking about this game totally differently. I mean, absurd amount of chances, right? I think he had six shots on goal in the first half and couldn't finish from 2 feet out. So if he had been scoring, maybe we'd be talking about it differently, is the point I want to make. But even though Nunes missed a lot of chances, I do feel like potentially he could be an outstanding pick over the likes of Salah, even though Salah, we know, is a, you know, FPL god when it comes to points. So a very difficult game to assess because it is just one sample size, but I wouldn't read too much into it. There's a couple players in this Liverpool team that are also really struggling, such as McAllister, whose form has just, you know, dropped completely. So there's a lot of things going on at this Liverpool team, and I don't think we need to rush too much to make, you know, decisions based on this one game only.
Yeah, it was a really interesting game. And I think just picking up on what you're talking about with Darwin Nunes, he was top for XG underachievers. So across the game week again, and it feels like every week we sit here and we say, you know, Darwin Nunes, plenty of opportunity, yet again, underperforming in terms of what he is expected to return in that game week. He also had 9 shots in game week 11, which was more than double anybody else's. So when we look at the number of opportunities that he had against Luton, you're absolutely right. He really should have returned, and Liverpool should have found themselves a fair distance ahead. So for me, Darwin is a real enigma in FPL right now, because every week I watch him, they are creating opportunities for him. Liverpool, with the likes of Szoboszlai, with Salah, with the attacking assets that Liverpool have, they get plenty of opportunity to score goals. Yet for Darwin Nunes, he gets in front of goal and he's just not finishing them. Now, as an FPL owner, I kind of look at that in two different ways. Firstly, I look at it and go, well, he's in the right places. He's doing the right things. At some point, he's going to return good on those potentials, those opportunities that he's created. But then how often are we going to sit there and say that? Like, how many weeks can we sit here and say, it's another game week where Darwin Nunes really should have returned? I mean, he should have had a double-digit haul in this game. He absolutely should have. The fact that he doesn't does lead to Liverpool having to change the formation up, change the way that they're playing. And honestly, for the end of that game, they were so, so much better. When Tsimikas was there, he was opening the play. We obviously see Luis Diaz coming on, getting the equalising goal for Liverpool. And actually, Luton really could have nicked it right at the death with Kabore again. So it was one of those weeks for Liverpool. It was one of those weeks in FPL generally, wasn't it? But for Liverpool, it really was one of those weeks where the players had the opportunities, they just didn't finish them. And Darwin Nunes kind of encapsulated that for me. I'm looking to change the way my formation is in my team, and I'm looking to have a front three rather than a midfield five in the coming weeks. And Darwin Nunes has been sitting right at the top of my wish list of players that I would like to have in that third forward slot alongside Haaland and Ollie Watkins, who, let's come to those guys in a minute, because neither of them performing either. But I don't know with Darwin whether he's really worth the level of investment that we're having to pay for him, because at some point we need to see returns on the opportunities he's created. And if they don't start coming, he's an expensive asset to have just for underlying data.
I think I'm totally with you. He's actually continuously rising week in and week out. 9 shots, you know, multiple chances a game, but what's the point if you can't finish it? And as a striker, he's got it all. He's got the physique, he's got the speed, he's got the, you know, connection, whatever it may be, but he can't finish. So it's a very, very frustrating situation for owners. However, Sam, we are, as non-owners, we have to look at this as an opportunity to potentially hop on him, because yes, he's not going to give you, you know, conversion rate week in and week out, but that haul is there. It's going to come. You just need to have the right timing, get that haul, and then move on when, you know, another player comes up with good fixtures. So I am looking at Darwin Nunes as an option and potentially someone that can outscore Salah if he can finish his chances. So as non-owners, actually, we should be kind of happy he didn't haul this game.
I mean, that's definitely true, isn't it? And when I look at the Liverpool fixtures over the coming weeks, obviously they've got Brentford next in game week 12. Then it's Man City, Fulham, Sheffield United, Crystal Palace, Manchester United. Like, there's a really great block of fixtures in there. And so I watched this Luton game thinking, I'm only doubled up on Liverpool right now. I've got Tsimikas, I've got Salah, I'd like another. McAllister picks up a yellow card. He's banned now from game week 12 because that's his 5th yellow card of the season. So if you are a McAllister owner, you have got that as an issue. Klopp might surprise me again, but I suspect he'll learn quite a bit about how that formation really didn't work against Luton. And we'll see Tsimikas start the game in game week 12. Now, obviously, we do have another opportunity to watch Liverpool in midweek in the Europa League. So one to watch and to see the system he deploys there. We tend to see rest for some of the bigger players in Europe for Liverpool so far this season. So hopefully that's the case for the likes of Salah. But Darwin Nunes, I'll definitely be watching carefully again in this Brentford game, especially as Flecken went off injured for Brentford in game week 11. So we'll be able to see then whether Darwin can kind of make the most of that. If I was a Darwin owner, I certainly wouldn't be getting rid because the underlying numbers are there. But it is making me question just a little bit whether he's the right third asset from Liverpool, given we aren't seeing the conversion of these opportunities right now. Now, from a Luton perspective, because I think we should give them a quick mention, because for me, this was their best performance of the season. I thought they did an absolutely fantastic job on dealing with a lot of the Liverpool threat. Now, yes, they rode their luck with Darwin, the amount of shots and the underlying stats, but actually thought they were okay. They've got Manchester United up next, then Crystal Palace, Brentford, Arsenal, Manchester City. But there is quite a nice block of fixtures coming up where they've got Bournemouth, Sheffield United and Burnley in the five games between 17 and 21. So there is some opportunity there if you do have the likes of Kabore and you can afford to just hold and bench to keep, because we did see returns on his attacking numbers, which we've been talking about, it feels like, for the last 11 game weeks, but we've not really seen so far.
I must stop you there, Sam, and say we are stretching it a bit in terms of getting Luton assets back into the team. I understand. Kabore, I believe he's 4.0. Morris, potentially a decent enabler. But again, we have the likes of Tsimikas. We have the likes of Brandsworth at Everton, who are pretty solid defensively as well. So there are options at the 4.0 price range for defensively. And, you know, we want to get our points from the 8 attacking spots that we have. Usually it's 7 attacking spots with 1 bench member. And I just don't think Morris is worth it taking up one of those spots. So for me, Luton is a team to target, not a team to bring in terms of FPL.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I certainly wouldn't be going for Morris. I think the attacking spots, like you say, they're so valuable to us in FPL. But defensively, I think, you know, if you've got Kabore in your team already, with the way that other injuries and issues might have gone this week, I don't think he's going to be a priority transfer out, particularly as we just saw some of those attacking threat potentials that he has. So I think if you've got him, you can afford to hold him, keep him as your third bench option, rather than swapping him for the likes of Branthwaite or Tsimikas. Now, if you do want to invest in Tsimikas, for me, I'd argue that he would actually become one of your more expensive, although not more expensive, like he'd come in the kind of second, third choice defender slot for me right now. Kabore, I don't hate it. If you've got him already, I think you keep him, you leave him on your bench and know that then for those fixtures that they've got coming up in the future, when actually some of the other teams have got more difficult games in those weeks, you might be able to deploy him at that point, because those are going to be the games that Luton are going to see as must win if they want to stay in the Premier League over the course of this season and make sure that they're still there when the new season starts next August. Right, let's move on from Luton and Liverpool, because I think we've covered most of the key assets, and let's move over to Manchester City, because I think we all called this game right, didn't we? We all thought that this was going to be a big Manchester City victory. People were heavily invested in Manchester City, particularly with the likes of Alvarez and Haaland. And as somebody who, ahead of game week 10, sold Alvarez, I must admit I was dreading this game, because I was going into Manchester City versus Bournemouth, which I thought would be a dominant Manchester City victory with just Erling Haaland. And that felt a struggle, given that over the course of the season, we are seeing a spreading of points at Manchester City. We're seeing plenty of goals from various different sources. This week, it was all about Doku. You don't have him in your team, do you?
Absolutely not. No, I don't think a very rare amount of managers have Doku in their team.
Yeah, and I think that's in part because he's a really hard own, isn't he? Given that you've got Jack Grealish in that position as well. And it does feel to me like Pep kind of looks at Jack Grealish and plays him in the games against the traditionally more difficult teams where they need that more grit, where they need that focus, that ability to kind of go forward and defend. Whereas with Doku, he seems to like to play him against the slightly lesser defensively secure teams who he can just run at and use his pace. And that is exactly what we saw happen against Bournemouth. So he obviously picks up the goal. He gets 4 assists in this game. He scored more points in this game than a lot of FPL managers got in their whole team across the week. But I would urge caution because I'm not convinced that he's going to start him against Chelsea in game week 12. So then you have this battle that you always have with Manchester City assets with, you know, yes, Doku shines in game week 11. Bernardo Silva absolutely shone with his brace in game week 12. He had more shots actually than any other Manchester City player across game week 11. Foden's on the bench. But what will we see tactically from Pep going into game week 12? It remains to be seen. Of course, we have the Champions League on Tuesday evening. We'll get some more word on Erling Haaland and this rolled ankle issue. I suspect he'll be okay. What are your thoughts on Haaland?
I think Haaland will be fine. I saw him in training photos today or yesterday, so I'm sure he'll be fine for the weekend. And if not, I think we'll get more news throughout the week. So I wouldn't panic in terms of Haaland. It doesn't seem like a major injury, but let's talk about Man City a bit because you make some great points there, Sam, and I'd like to deep dive a little bit about their history in the last couple of seasons and why I think Pep is such a genius and why I think Doku coming into the team this year is so out of the blue yet genius as well. Because one of the things you just mentioned as you were speaking, Sam, is the points were spread out this season. Seems like a lot of the Man City players are scoring. Last season was a sort of one train thing where Haaland was getting the majority of goals, majority of points, right? Mm. But previously, there was no Haaland, right? I'm sure we had Aguero, but even when Aguero was around, I did this one exercise 2 or 3 seasons ago when I was trying to pick between the likes of Gundogan, Foden, and Bernardo Silva and all the Man City defenders, midfielders about 3 seasons ago. And this was an exercise I did where in December, because it's Premier League crunch period with the Boxing Day and, you know, there's so many games, right? I saw that in that 1 month, Man City, this is, I think, the 2021 season, had about 7 or 8 different goal scorers. So that was exclamation point for me, right? So I looked into January, I looked into February, and again, it was very, very spread out. So Man City likes to spread their goals out. That's what Pep likes to do. Last season was a little bit different because the likes of Haaland was getting most of the goals. And this season too, Haaland's going to get most of the goals. But you have the likes of Alvarez there now that's also, you know, taking some load off of Haaland. But what I find so interesting about this Doku signing is that even when Man City signed Haaland or Pep brought Haaland, he realizes he needs to change the team, change the way they play, in order to cater to make Haaland even more exceptional than he is. He's a generation talent, but the team is also helping him develop and get better than he is. This season, they brought Doku because he's a one-on-one dribbling specialist, one of the best in the European top five leagues. Last season, amongst top 5 major European leagues, Doku was 4th in terms of dribble attempts, 60% success rate, 2nd most, with an average of 6.8 attempts per game, which is the most dribbling attempts of all type 5 European leagues. Basically, Pep saying, okay, you guys know that I have Haaland. You guys know I have these world-class midfielders. You guys know I like to possess the ball, move the ball side to side. But now I have another special weapon in Doku that can attack these one-on-one games and that can take on any defender in the league. So that's what I love about Man City. In terms of FPL, if we bring it back, Sam, exactly your point. It's really, really hard to pick the right player at the right time. Like, just because Doku had a massive haul this week, as you mentioned, might be benched the next game. You know, it might be Foden with the haul next game. It might be Rodri coming out of nowhere and scoring 2 more goals, as we saw early in the season. So that's just the reality of Man City. But when they do have a good fixture, and especially when you have a Doku fixture, you should be tempted to bring him in, even if it's for a 1 or 2 sample size, because Man City are still the best team in the league and are, you know, starting to find their groove again after a tough period between game weeks 8 through 10. So I'm excited that the likes of Doku But to be honest, it would be very hard for me to pinpoint the right player to bring in terms of Man City, except Haaland.
Yeah, you see, when you look at the Manchester City fixtures, obviously, as I've mentioned, it's Chelsea up next. Then it's Liverpool, Spurs and Villa. Those feel like Jack Grealish games to me. They feel like games where Grealish will help to control the midfield, which is something that Pep will want against those more difficult sides to break down, those very attacking, aggressive teams. After that, we then have games for Man City, Luton, Crystal Palace, Everton and Sheffield United. Now, there is the blank in there in game week 18 when they're at the Club World Cup. But 4 out of 5 games, that looks like a really nice run of slightly easier fixtures. I could see Doku starting in those games, and that might be the moment that you look to invest in him.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's about finding a stretch of 2 or 3, potentially 4 games where he's going to start, hopefully maybe 3 out of the 4 games. And you take the points and run with it is my honest opinion in terms of bringing Man City assets, except the likes of, you know, Haaland and Alvarez, who seem like absolute locks in the team this season.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I don't have Alvarez right now. Like I mentioned, I sold him for Ollie Watkins. And looking at the fixtures that they have coming up in the next few weeks, I don't think I'm going to prioritise bringing him in. But that doesn't mean that I think he's a bad asset or that I think he won't return points, because I think he probably will. I think I've been quite lucky that I sold him and he hasn't hauled in the last couple of game weeks. But I think, you know, I'm going to be keeping a close eye on what Pep's got to say about Haaland this week. As you mentioned, pitcher back in training and obviously it's Champions League. So we will get more of an indication from Pep on what's happening with Haaland, depending upon, you know, does he start tonight? Is he on the bench for the Champions League? And then we can kind of make judgments. But moving forward, I think keeping Haaland makes a lot of sense to me, even now. Because had he stayed on that pitch for the full 90 minutes, I'm sure that there would have been some attacking returns for him across that game. And as a Haaland captain in game week 11, it was quite frustrating. Another game that I found quite frustrating was the game between Brentford and West Ham. Because, well, for me, this was actually one of the games of the week. It was such a fantastic game of football to watch. Yeah, both sides really attacking each other. And Mbeumo, a couple of weeks ago, FPL managers and content creators all around the FPL community were saying, it's time to sell Brian Mbeumo, because that form at the beginning of the season was there, but it had massively dropped off. He's now got returns in each of his last 3 weeks, 32 FPL points in 3 weeks. Only Doku, who we've just been talking about, has more attacking returns in that period. And that's because he got them all pretty much in game week 11. So Mbeumo's 5 attacking returns in that period. I just think that at the price point that he is, you've got to pay 6.8 for him right now. He feels like a really, really nice asset. He's still not hugely highly owned either, because a lot of people were kind of jumping off of him. West Ham, they are a really good side this year. And Mbeumo did really well against them. Now, the one thing that puts me off investing in him is the next 2 games, Liverpool and Arsenal. But after that, Luton, Brighton, Sheffield United, difficult game against Villa and the blank, Wolves, Crystal Palace, Nottingham Forest. I think Brian Mbeumo put his hand up in game week 11. In fact, in game week 10 and game week 9 as well, and said, hi, FPL managers, don't forget that I exist.
Yeah. So game week 14, Mbeumo is going to be my priority transfer in. And I guarantee you, Sam, a lot of managers and a lot of engaged top-level managers are going to bring Mbeumo in game week 14. No Tony, so he's a talisman. He's shown he can do it last season. Nailed 90 minutes on penalties, playing for a very solid unit, great coach. You know, what's not to like? And his price point. His price point is ridiculous for the amount of output that he's generating. I mean, generating at a premium price point in terms of FPL. Brian Mbeumo is a must-have by the time Game Week 14 comes. But as you mentioned, the next 2 fixtures are tough. Maybe not so much, because Brentford play a 5-3-2 low block. They sit really, really deep. And then they allow for the other team to attack them in waves and waves and waves before they find the counter. And who's on the counter? It's Mbeumo and Wissa at the end of it, usually. And hence, you've seen Brentford score a lot of goals towards the end of games this season, which is a product of their 5-3-2 defensive low block and counterattack. So I don't think these tough fixtures will be so detrimental in terms of bringing Mbeumo in. I think he could also tick along in these next two fixtures. But if you want to play it safe, game week 14, I do feel like he's a priority must-have by in FPL teams.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't owned him so far this season. And he's the fifth highest scoring player in the game. So, exactly. You know, 72 points. I think you're absolutely right in what you said. He is talismanic for them right now because they don't have even Tony in their team. I am slightly put off by the Liverpool and Arsenal fixtures. And it's not really anything to do with Mbeumo himself. It's also more to do with the fact that there are other players that I kind of want to prioritise bringing in. But I totally agree with what you're saying. I'm looking at that Luton game in game week 14 and the run of fixtures that they have afterwards, thinking, this is a player that I really want to be on. And yes, you're going to have to give yourself a route to having a good squad for game week 18 because of the blank if you're holding a lot of Manchester City assets. But for me, I'm only holding Haaland right now. I'm not planning to heavily invest any more in Manchester City between now and 18. So I think holding Mbeumo and holding Haaland through the blank and then having them both come back for the run of fixtures they have afterwards makes a lot of sense.
One thing on Mbeumo as well, Sam, is that he's actually not underperforming or overperforming. He's ticking along exactly where his XG and XA is. So what that means is that this is potentially very sustainable for him as well.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I really like him. Just a quick note on Flecken before we talk about West Ham. He goes off in that game, which will have been a frustration to Flecken owners. However, I'm not sure that many Flecken owners went into this game expecting a clean sheet out of him. It does appear that it was a bit of a dead leg. I would anticipate that he'll be okay for game week 12, but all is on the press conference at the back end of this week just to make sure that Flecken's okay, because otherwise some people might have goalkeeper issues given that Matt Turner was also benched for Nottingham Forest clean sheet this week. If you've got Flecken and Turner as your goalkeepers, just listen really carefully to the press conferences this week because you might have a goalkeeping problem that you need to deal with.
Yeah.
On the other side of this game then, West Ham, Jarrod Bowen is in my team. I've owned him for a fair few weeks now since I wildcarded, and I have been really, really pleased with Bowen since I brought him in. He's returning consistently. He's now got four in the last six game weeks. And amongst the midfielders, only Salah and Son have scored more goals than Bowen, seven over the course of this season so far. They've both got eight. I really, really like Bowen as a pick. And I know that there's a lot of managers out there who are thinking, I want to save a bit of budget. Could I go for Kudos instead? Now, we saw in game week 11 what a fantastic performance we had from him and Bowen together. The teamwork and the connection between the two was brilliant. I still really like Bowen and I think he's worth the extra. But if you can't afford him, Mohamed Kudos is offering a really nice alternative right now for less money.
Yeah, I agree. I think if I could get Bowen in my wildcard 10 team, I would have done it immediately, but it is the price point. And because of his price point, that means I couldn't get the likes of Son, Saka, and other players that I prioritized over him. Hence, Bowen is very hard to get in our teams. It's not like he's a bad asset. He's a great, great asset. I remember last season was one to forget just because West Ham had a tough time. But if you remember the previous season, Bowen was absolutely exceptional and he seems to be improving year on year out. He's also pretty good with his head. Also, he gets these like sort of header goals here and there. So there's more routes to points as well. And there's an interesting story about Bowen. I know this is a little bit off topic, but he used to study Aaron Robin, or I think he still studies Robin, about how Robin does that left cutback and then scores goals. But Robin also goes to his right and crosses really well with his weak foot. So not only is he a student of the game, he's emulating his idols. And he was quoted to say early on the season, I always want to get in the box where the ball, when the ball is wide. I always want to score goals and get assists. You know, he's hungry for those goals. He's hungry for those assists. And as FPL managers, if your player says that, it's the ultimate thing, right? So Bowen, certainly a great asset if you can afford him, but it comes with the caveat of where are you sacrificing in order to afford Jarrod Bowen?
Yeah, because right now I don't have Bukayo Saka in my team. And that's the spot that was originally going to be sacrificed. I had Bowen for a few weeks and I was thinking, well, if West Ham don't perform, if Bowen doesn't perform, then I'll just upgrade him to Saka. And that gives me my Arsenal player that I really wanted for this run of fixtures that Arsenal are about to embank on. And more on Arsenal in a minute. But really would struggle to sell Jarrod Bowen right now. So I'll have to find another route into an Arsenal asset. Before we talk about the Arsenal game, just a quick word on Areola. He's obviously the most popular goalie in the game. He's my goalkeeper. I've also got Matt Turner as my second goalkeeper. And I'm looking at the pair of them. Obviously, Turner getting benched in game week 11. Areola, well, just the 1 point. He concedes 3 goals. No clean sheets now since game week 7 against Sheffield United. And in fact, that was Areola's only clean sheet so far this season. Now, yes, we do see save points from him sometimes. Do we still think Areola is the best goalkeeper in the game? 42 saves so far. So we do get those additional points. But for me, if I was wildcarding right now, I'm not sure I'd go with Areola on a wildcard, because I think from your goalie, you want those clean sheets. And we just haven't been seeing that from West Ham.
Yeah, I think the goalie is a dead spot to me this year. I mean, honestly, there's no answer here. I mean, even though you're saying that you wouldn't go with Areola on the wildcard, my question to you would be, who would you go for? And really, there's no standout keeper that's holding their hand up, right? I mean, I know people are talking about Johnson. I know people are talking about Flecken, and I get it. There's, you know, word on the street in terms of Sanchez potentially game week 16. Raya was an option, but not anymore. So the goalkeeper spot, it has been just frustrating for everybody, basically. I mean, Pickford all of a sudden getting clean sheets after all of us sell him. As soon as we sell Areola, I guarantee he's going to get 5 clean sheets in a row, is the way I feel. So I just think that the floor might be higher than other keepers, but keeper ceilings in general are not that high. So I wouldn't stress too much about it. If you have the luxury of having a transfer, maybe you can go for a different keeper. But if you don't, just keep Areola. He still has a solid amount of good fixtures remaining. And just hope for the best is what I would like to tell managers.
Yeah, I mean, you are right. It's Forest and then Burnley, Crystal Palace in the next 3 weeks. Then it's Spurs, Fulham, Watford and Manchester United. So the fixtures are nice and there should definitely be some clean sheets in there. But part of the reason I mention this at this point, because it's a nice segue into Arsenal, because I don't have any Arsenal assets in my team. And I watched the Newcastle versus Arsenal game really looking for who was going to be my Arsenal player. Like, I won a couple of them. I'd rolled my transfer into game week 11 to ensure that I had 2 free transfers to bring in 2 Arsenal assets. And one of the things that really struck me in this game was Areola isn't keeping the clean sheets, but Arsenal's fixtures sure look clean sheetable over the next few weeks. And if I wasn't dealing with a few defensive headaches this week in terms of injuries to the likes of Dan Burn, more on him in a minute, I might have just had a look at the Areola to Raya transfer, because it would have allowed me to invest in the Arsenal defence at the same price as Gabriel without having to disrupt the defence that I actually quite like and has good attacking returns potential. So I think if I was wildcarding right now, I probably would go with Raya as my goalkeeper of choice, because I think the Arsenal fixtures are the most likely for longevity of clean sheets over an extended period of time. But this game was another absolutely fascinating one for me. It was one of these games where, you know, before Jesus got injured, I was really, really carefully monitoring Gabriel Martinelli. And I was thinking, this might be the way that I go with my Arsenal investment, because his relationship and his chemistry with Gabriel Jesus is so good. And I was a little bit worried about Martinelli without him there and what that might mean for him, whether he would be as attacking as we've seen. But he was the most advanced Arsenal player on the pitch right up until Trossard comes on in that game. He was furthest forward. He had 3 attempts on goal, which was the most across the match. He also created 5 chances, which again was the most across the match. So Martinelli was the kind of the standout for me. He was the one I looked at and was like, okay, that's interesting, because I do really need an Arsenal attacker, and Saka is difficult because of the price point. Now, maybe with the Spurs injuries, it might not be the end of the world. It might be easier to get to Saka than maybe I was originally anticipating. But his price point, he's cheaper. What do you think about him as a Arsenal investment?
Yeah, I think Martinelli's a very explosive pick that can be frustrating to own at times because of, as you mentioned, the amount of chances he creates, amount of chances he gets, but it doesn't always seem to add up to a 15-pointer haul, right? One of the issues I do face with Martinelli and Saka, Sam, is that I do think they're getting double teamed a lot. And I don't mean like directly two players on him the entire game, but they seem to have figured out how Arteta plays football and how they utilize Martinelli and Saka on the wing. So that's the sort of difference I see between him and Pep, because now Pep's brought in Doku, as I mentioned earlier, that can create a different weapon for the Man City side, whereas Arsenal seem to be more predictable this season. Yet with the amount of good fixtures coming soon, I don't think it's a bad idea to invest in Arsenal offense, but I do think Arsenal are better defensively. And if anything, I would double up on their defense before I go for another attacker, because they just couldn't crack the wall in terms of Newcastle. And it just seemed like a sort of, you know, hopeful game of Arsenal wanting to score, whereas Newcastle took their chance in the second half. But defensively, I think both teams are really solid. So I actually prefer to go double defense over double attack in Arsenal.
I think I agree. However, the fixtures are Burnley, Brentford, Wolves, Fulham, and then it's Villa, and Brighton up to game week 17. Like, they are defences that the Arsenal attacking assets are going to be able to get against. Like, they're not the Newcastle-style defence. So I do think that there's definitely goals in there. And Nketiah is another one that I'm really closely monitoring. And obviously, we're going to have to see again how long Jesus is out and whether Nketiah remains a long-term pick. But in the short term, I think those fixtures look prime for Arsenal goals. Yes, they didn't get any against Newcastle, but I think that said more about the Newcastle defence. And a quick word on Kieran Trippier before, because I'm conscious of how long we've been talking probably about Spurs at the beginning of this podcast. But Kieran Trippier, yet again, with the three bonus points. For me, as a Dan Burn owner, obviously watched him go off injured, and that's not looking great. Eddie Howe speaking about him being out for some time, rumoured to be around a couple of months. So that's an issue that I now need to deal with. And the straight swap over to an Arsenal defender is looking more and more obvious as the hours roll by. But Trippier, it feels to me like if you're investing in Newcastle defensively, it just has to be Trippier, because it's just a bonus point magnet. Every single week he gets a bonus point, and this week another three of them.
Yeah, I think I was one of those owners that had Trippier from game week 7 through 10, I believe, where he was just going, you know, back to back double digit points. So I love Trippier. I think he's a fantastic option, and we were afraid of the fixtures, had to drop him. Plus, he's so expensive that you couldn't afford the likes of Saka or the other premium. So it is another sacrifice play, right? If you want Trippier, you need to sacrifice one of your premium, you know, attackers. And if you think that's worth it, then go for it. But I do think that I still value Saka over Trippier at this point in time, and Son over Trippier at this point in time. But when their fixtures get better, and when Newcastle, I think, hits around game week 17, they have Fulham, Luton, and Nottingham Forest. You know, a lot of us are going to want Trippier in our teams then. So he's a tough one. He's a great player. He's a great FPL option. It's almost mind-boggling that we don't have him in our teams. But again, would you rather have Son, or would you rather have Trippier? Would you rather have Saka, or would you have Trippier? Is sort of the questions that I've been asking myself.
Yeah, and I think you're right. Bournemouth, Chelsea, Manchester United, Everton, then Spurs, Fulham, Luton and Nottingham Forest. However, that does not feel a run that I want to be without any Newcastle assets. Yes. Now, for me, getting Trippier is going to be a challenge, but getting the likes of Gordon is much, much easier in that midfielder slot. And, you know, yet again, we're seeing Gordon with the attacking returns. I think probably for me, he's going to be the one that I target, because when Isak comes back, you then get the headache of Easton and Wilson. We obviously have had Willock also playing in recent weeks, but we don't always get that. So in this game, Wilson was top for expected assists, Wilson top for expected goals, expected assists. It feels more complex investing in the Newcastle attack, apart from Anthony Gordon, who feels like a really nice, cheap, budget-enabling route into a Newcastle team whose fixtures are great and coming off of a win against Arsenal.
Yeah.
We'll be buoyed by that, right? Mm. So yeah, I think, look, game week 11, Andy, it was crazy, wasn't it? And I think all of these games that we've just talked about kind of encapsulate that.
Yeah, it was a crazy week, one to forget, one not to dwell on, as we mentioned earlier on. And after a difficult game week for many, and with the European action back this week, try and be patient with those transfers. Kelly, Jules, and Sam will be back with the FPL pod on Thursday. They'll look at the big talking points ahead of game week 12.
And if you haven't already done so, join the FPL Pod League. The code is IB3WLK. I've really enjoyed chatting with you this morning, Andy. And thank you for making me feel a little bit better about what happened at the Spurs Stadium on Monday evening. I'll see you guys soon.
Bye.